Welcome to the Free Stretch, Week 4 edition in the NFL. I am Bobby Fenton, first loss of the season edition of the show today as well, as we join you and get ready for Sunday night football this week. The Bucs will be taking on the Patriots and everything that comes along with that, which we'll talk about. And they'll do it coming off of a loss for the first time since they lost to the Chiefs before their bye week many, many, many moons ago. Feels like forever. And you know what? The way people are acting after this most recent loss and this past Sunday, it kind of is something that was a long time ago, because a lot of people don't know how to act after the Bucs lose a game. But all the familiar feelings are coming back, and we'll hash it all out today. Bucs are 2-1, of course. The Rams are a very good team, of course. And the Bucs have a chance to go 3-1 with a win in New England on Sunday night. So thanks for joining us. The Free Stretch, like it always is brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, where right now, just like always, any car you want to buy, pre-owned, used, car, truck, van, you get the unlimited nationwide powertrain warranty. It means you own the car that you bought at Bill Curry Ford. You can bring it back anytime there's engine trouble, and you are covered, not for the first year or for the first 2 years. As long as you still own the car you bought at Bill Curry Ford, that's covered. They're building, not doing it yet, but they're going to be building an entirely new showroom, which is amazing because the one they have now is really nice and huge and spacious. So you can go there and check it out. A mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. You can also go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. C-U-R-R-I-E is how they spell it. If you go there, you can look at everything. The haggle-free, transparent online pricing is right there. You check it out. If you like something, you can go see it, or you can have them bring it to your house or your office, and they'll let you test drive it that way without you having to even leave. Same thing if you buy it. Either way, check them out, BillCurryFord.com. Or see them a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the lot on Dale Mabry Highway, just north of Hillsborough. They've been serving the Tampa Bay area for 60 years now. So thanks to them. Thanks to the Joes for giving me the opportunity every week to get in front of you guys. And I'm glad about that all the time, but especially this week, because I feel like, I don't want to say my specialty, but I feel like my strengths on this podcast are more pronounced the weeks after we lose. And maybe part of that is my upbringing, because I grew up, you know, born in 1980, grew up in the 80s and 90s with the Bucs losing quite a bit. It wasn't all championships and sunshine. In fact, it was never any of those things. And maybe some of those strengths come from where I cut my teeth on the radio at WDAE 620, doing the post-game show during the Raheem Morris years, where I would go on there every Sunday afternoon, usually around 5 o'clock or whatever it was, 5:30. By the time they did, you know, the network post-game show, then I'd come on with the post-post-game show, I called it. After some of the most horrific losses, I mean, I was on there every week after, you know, 45-10, 38-13. I mean, if you remember those days, besides 2010, the Bucs were getting their asses kicked on a weekly basis, and I mean badly. And I did a lot of shows after those type of games. So maybe it's that. I don't know what it is, but I feel like you all, and I don't want to tell you what's good for you or what's not good for you. If you're listening at all, I'm appreciative. But I feel like on the weeks after a loss, I can help you guys even more. You don't need me to come in here and pump sunshine when everything's going well. Anybody can do that. But days like today, weeks like this week, after a loss, I feel like is where I can really shine. So the Bucs had not lost a game, like I said, until Sunday. Before last year's bye week was the last time they lost to the Chiefs, of course, and they had the bye week, then they won all the rest of their games, including against the Chiefs again, and won the Super Bowl, which was amazing. But now that we got to that point, now that the Bucs won all those games and won the NFC Championship and won the Super Bowl and have all the starters returning, there's been a very quick shift in the mindset of the fan base, understandably so, because now we're the big guys, and now we think like the alpha people. All right, oh, hey, we're the Bucs. We can do whatever we want. We're not going to lose. And now the Bucs just lost a game, looked a little vulnerable, and everybody's freaking out all over again. So I don't think I need to remind you. I think if you close your eyes and you think really hard, you can probably remember back to less than a year ago. But less than a year ago, the Bucs lost a bunch. They lost 5 times. They were 7-5 at one point. They were one result being changed away from being 6-6 at one point. But even so, it's 7-5, and remember the loss to the Chiefs, how they were getting clowned, Tyreek Hill's giving the peace sign, doing backflips into our end zone right in front of our faces? It was a complete joke, And that wasn't even the low point of the season. The low point was probably before that when they played the Saints and got beat by 5 touchdowns on Sunday Night Football on national TV. All those things happened not long ago. And then they went on to the playoffs and against two times against those same teams that had beaten them in the Saints and the Chiefs, and another time against the Packers team that they had already beaten. None of those things mattered anymore. So what I'm here to tell you is, you know, everybody relax. I mean, I was disappointed on Sunday. It was a big game, you know, you had, and as big a game as you can have in week three, I should say. You're going on the road against a team who's perceived to be maybe the biggest threat to your Super Bowl contendership in the Rams. A lot of people like them to do what the Bucs did last year and win the Super Bowl in their own home stadium. It's a team that the Bucs have lost to. They lost to them last season on Monday Night Football in Tampa. And, you know, it was a game that everybody had circled even before the one coming up this Sunday, because these are two good teams. It was the only matchup of 2-0 teams last week. So you're all fired up for a big marquee matchup, and you expect more. Not that the Bucs were atrocious or anything, but and the game itself, I thought, was pretty blah. And the Rams, to their credit, and I was listening to Ira and the Joe Bucs fanboys on their podcast, and Ira said this, and he was right. You know, I think a lot of it, you just give credit to the Rams more than something that the Bucs specifically did wrong. Although there are always things you could change. But either way, do you remember last season? Like, do you remember all that going on in the early part of the season? And, you know, the Bucs didn't have it figured out right away. They were 7-5. Do you remember the defense last season and how much better they got? Like, that defense that we won the Super Bowl with was not the same defense they had in week 5 or 6 or 4 or whatever. Even though it was a lot of the same people, I don't mean it physically changed, but it was just a different defense by the end of the year. And I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen again. I have no idea what's going to happen the rest of the season. I am saying that what happened this past Sunday is not a reason to feel less good about the prospects of the 2021 season. There's a lot of football left to play. And if anything, I mean, when we get to the point, especially now with an extra game too, we got 17 games instead of 16, but when we get to the point where in December, or even like once we hit Thanksgiving, you're not going to remember any of this. None of this is going to matter. I mean, sure, the wins and losses count the same, of course, but in sports in general, in the NFL, all of them, really. I mean, you have these long regular seasons. The NFL's got the shortest of them all, but even in the NFL, like, what you do in December, and more specifically, what you do in January, is what's going to end up making or breaking you. Now, you have to get to that point, of course, but I'm not any less optimistic the Bucs will be playing those big games later on in the season than I was before Sunday. Now, watching the game, you know, what did the Rams do? And it's not just the Rams. I mean, the Dallas did this, and so did Atlanta, really. I mean, right now the Bucs defense is getting attacked on the outside. I mean, you can see that. We're good up the middle. I mean, I watched the game Sunday, and even in not playing that well, Vita Vea is still bulldozing people and moving them all over the place. But what are other teams doing? And the Rams did it really well, and Sean McVay is a hell of a coach. You know, hey, pressure coming? Okay, just flip one to the outside. Quick screen or whatever, just get it out there. First of all, it negates your pressure. And second of all, it makes those big boys run. Now, you know, those guys have to turn and run to the outside, and those big boys get tired. That's, I mean, that's how offenses have been attacking the Bucs. Booger McFarland tweeted about it. It's something you can see if you watch the games. And the Bucs haven't really stopped it yet, so there's no reason to think that'll be any different until they do. Now, we'll get to the big news of the week in a few moments. Of course, there is a new face on the scene in Richard Sherman. That was not the case before. But, I mean, that's what the Rams did, among other things. And even still, the Bucs were in that game. I think the Jamel Dean interception drop early in the game was a big, big play. You know, when receivers drop passes, we go, oh, God, you know, what a coulda, shoulda, that would have been a touchdown, or that would have been a drive preserver. But when defenders drop balls, we don't do that. We just say, oh, at least he broke it up. Good play, you know. But a drop on an interception can be just as damaging, you know, when you do it on defense as it is when a receiver drops it. And that was a deflected ball that was just hanging in the air. Dean's got to come down with that. And I'm not saying that's the reason we lost the game. There was a lot of things that happened. But I'm just trying to illustrate that even playing the way the Bucs played, you know, they had a chance, and they couldn't quite, they ran out of time, but they had a chance to be in that game and probably would have been in that game with a couple simple little things. All these games are close in the NFL. And it wasn't the Bucs' best effort, but by no means am I completely freaked out about it. But just don't have a short memory. Like, look at the big picture. Everybody here who's freaking out right now needs to remember what it felt like after that Chiefs game last year, or even more so what it felt like after that Saints game last year, the second one, the one at home, when they lost 38-3. Because if I had told any of you that Monday morning after the loss on Sunday Night Football that the Bucs were going to lose, I think that was just one more, right? That was the one before the Chiefs. If I told you then the Bucs are going to lose one or two more games the whole rest of the year and make a run all the way to the Super Bowl and win it at home, you wouldn't have believed it on Monday morning after the Saints game last year, 38-3. You would have just been happy if I told you we were going to make the playoffs as a wild card. And yet, they did that, and they ran the table. And don't worry about this, okay? Again, not telling you to be happy. I want the Bucs to go 17-0, of course, but you're going to lose games. They'll lose again, okay? They will. And so a lot of you guys, you know, especially, I mean, I don't think there's a ton of bandwagon people, but, you know, when you win a Super Bowl like that, all of a sudden, you know, a lot of the Johnny-come-latelys come out, and it shows. They weren't around for the hard stuff. But if you've been around, even in the recent times, you know, like I said, through Dirk Cutter or Lovie Smith or Greg Schiano or Raheem Morris, all those seasons or the late Gruden years, never mind if you were around for the 80s and most of the 90s, then you know, okay? So let's be cool right now. And it was a tough loss. And it was a bummer. Got a chance to redeem all of that coming up on Sunday night. Of course, you know, another thing to remember is they're missing some guys. Jason Pierre-Paul was out. He's probably out again for Sunday. Antonio Brown was out. That's a big miss. He is supposed to be back. In fact, I'm recording this a little after noon on Thursday the 30th. So if you're listening, just to give you a frame of reference of when I'm doing this, that's when it is. And Antonio Brown, I believe, just got officially cleared. So he should be back on Sunday. Looking at some of the other injury things, I already mentioned Brown, JPP. Speaking of Jamel Dean, he was potentially, you know, tweaked a little bit, but he practiced. He should be okay. Scotty Miller has the hip injury. He's been placed on IR. He's out at least 3 weeks, but it could be longer. Giovanni Bernard has a sprained MCL, I believe, and he is unlikely. And it looks like Gronkowski's fine. I mean, not fine, but he took a big hit to the ribs. Didn't show any damage when he got tested, so he should be okay. And, of course, with this game being a lot more personal than just another game, I would expect him to be out there. So the Bucs will be without JPP. They'll be without Giovanni Bernard. They should be pretty good to go other than that. And, of course, now they add Richard Sherman. Everybody's going to want to talk about that, and we will today. It is looking like, though, he is not – I mean, he'll be available. He will be able to play Sunday. But he said he would need probably a little more practice to be ready to play, and the Bucs seem to agree just from some quotes from Arians and things like that. We'll see, but I don't think he'll be making a huge impact yet. But as far as the game Sunday, of course, the whole big thing, all the hype is going to surround the return of Tom Brady to Foxborough, and Rob Gronkowski for that matter, although he's not getting as much attention. It's a return for both of them. It has happened before. And Greg Allman wrote a nice article on this in The Athletic. There have been seven, which is more than I would have guessed, seven quarterback-coach Super Bowl-winning combos that then faced each other as opponents later on down the line. A couple of them faced each other multiple times. So there's been 13 total games, but amongst seven pairs of coach-quarterback, you know, combinations that won a Super Bowl together, then later ended up as opponents. And not that I think it means anything, but the quarterbacks are 9-4 in those matchups of facing coaches that they won a Super Bowl with. I'll give you a moment. You can try and guess what you think some of the combinations are, but I'll read some of them here real quick. And if you want to go to the article on The Athletic or on Greg Allman's Twitter feed, he wrote a nice piece. But Brett Favre and Mike Holmgren, of course, they won the Super Bowl together in 1996 with the Packers. And they actually played a bunch of times after that as you know, Holmgren went on to coach some other teams. Favre bounced around the league with some other teams. And so they account for a few of the matchups. Troy Aikman played Jimmy Johnson twice after they won a Super Bowl together when Jimmy Johnson started coaching the Dolphins. Troy Aikman won both of those. Joe Montana, you know, Bill Walsh retired after he won his Super Bowls with the 49ers. But then George Seifert won one too with Joe Montana. And then Montana ended up facing George Seifert and with the Chiefs, and Montana won that game. Jeff Hostetler and Bill Parcells won a Super Bowl right here, next door to Raymond James Stadium, where the old Sombrero used to rest. Probably the best Super Bowl ever, or one of them. And that was the Scott Norwood missed kick. He ended up playing against Parcells later on in his career. And that was only one, and Hostetler won that one. Trent Dilfer also won a Super Bowl in Tampa, but not for the Bucs. That was played here when they the Ravens beat the Giants. And he ended up playing against Brian Billick later on down the line. And, of course, one you may remember, although it wasn't a very memorable game, Brad Johnson ended up playing for the Cowboys after winning a Super Bowl with the Bucs here a few years later. And, in fact, it was his only win as a Cowboys starter. He beat the Bucs and John Gruden, and that was 2008, and that was a 13-9 Cowboys win. Johnson only had 122 yards in that game, but the Bucs offense didn't do anything, and the Cowboys won it. Now Brad Johnson's making trick shots on YouTube. If you go to Brad Johnson's Twitter, he always posts them, and he's got like a backyard basketball court, and he's like an older, more country version of the Dude Perfect guys, basically. But anyway, those are the other quarterback coach combinations that have played against each other after winning a Super Bowl. We'll see what happens with Brady and Belichick and all that stuff. But, here's the thing. There's going to be a lot of hype about this game on Sunday. It's going to be all about like the telecast. They're already predicting like a record television viewership, maybe the most watched Sunday night game, or even most watched non-playoff or non-Super Bowl NFL game ever. We'll see if that comes to pass. You can even go online if you're on the betting websites like Bovada or Bet Online or whatever, and you can bet over-under on the projected TV audience. So all those things will be what they are. But just like anything with hype, once the ball gets kicked off and they run like one or two plays, it's just going to be like a regular football game. Like that, that storyline will apply up to the lead-up, but once the game gets going, it's football. And so, as a fan, like, this is a big game for the Bucs. Like, forget about, again, I say a big game, as big as you can get in week four, but you don't want to lose two in a row. The difference between 3-1 and 2-2 feels like a bigger difference than most swings do. I mean, any game you win or lose, it's a two-game swing on your record, but, you want to keep that 3-1. You want to keep that a couple games above 500. You're in a division that you think you're supposed to win, but there's some tough competition. The Panthers are 3-0 now, and all those other things. So, just from a purely football standpoint, this is a game the Bucs, it's fairly important here in week four. And I know all the things that go along personally and what it's going to be like for Tom Brady. I imagine it'll be just an avalanche of emotions and stuff like that for a little while. But again, I trust him and Gronkowski. Once the game gets going and once all that stuff gets done and whatever they do in the pregame and if they have some video tribute or who knows, once the game started, it's football. So, what I'll be looking for out there, just going back to the Rams game and even looking through the first three games in general, not just the Rams game, the pass rush, I am always, if you've heard me on this show before, a huge pass rush guy. Pass rush. That's where it all starts to me. I know the Bucs have had some issues on the tips. We'll talk about Richard Sherman in a minute. But, I haven't heard Shaq Barrett's name called very much. He got that big contract. I'm not criticizing, it's only the third game. He got that big contract, deservedly so, for what he did. And, been a little quiet to start this year off so far. I think he's got someone who needs to step up. And I know, without JPP, and this is another thing they talked about on the Ira Kaufman show with the Joes, is all they said, he doesn't have JPP. And then Ira correctly pointed out, if he needs JPP to be any good, then he's not a $20 million guy. Now, how much he's getting paid, I guess, doesn't matter anyway. He's not going to have JPP this week either way. So, yeah, he might see more attention and things like that. Joe Tryon Shoyinka continues to improve. He's not going to be a dominant force just yet, but I like what I've seen out of him so far. But, that's Shaq Barrett's thing right now on the outside without JPP there. And so, yeah, they're going to need more out of him. The pass rush is what begets everything, and especially if a rookie quarterback you're facing. This is a game on paper. And what's the number right now? I haven't even looked at the number. But the Bucs should be favored. Let's play guess that line because I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to say, just guessing, and again, I haven't looked at the line in any way, that the Bucs in this game are favored. I don't think it's a full touchdown. But again, rookie quarterback, a Patriots team that hasn't looked great, and the Bucs are still the Bucs. I'm going to say Bucks by 6, maybe 6.5. Okay, so I'm going to look it up now. I haven't seen it yet. Let me look it up here on my phone. All right, it is 7. It's 7. Okay, so I thought maybe it wouldn't quite get to a full touchdown. But yeah, I mean, on paper, this is a game the Bucks, if you look at, and most games are like this, given who the Bucks have, this is a game the Bucks should win. And especially when you're facing a rookie quarterback like that, I'm interested to see what Todd Bowles comes up with for this one. But, you know, the more pressure you can get on someone like that, the better. And so that's, to me, where it all begins. And then you've got, you know, not exactly help returning yet. I mean, Jamel Dean is okay, so he'll be able to be out there. Carlton Davis on the other side. We'll see if Richard Sherman factors. Again, he said he's ready to help, but thinks he needs a little more practice time. So I'm not sure how much he will factor in this game. But not just this game Sunday. Let's look at the overall idea of bringing in Richard Sherman, because, again, this happened just the other day. Haven't had a chance to talk about it on the show yet. So Richard Sherman comes in here. He's one of the best lockdown corners in the league when he's been healthy over recent years. Now, obviously, he's a little older now. He wasn't healthy last year and didn't play that much. But in 2019, he was very good. And if you add up all of his seasons, I don't think he's ever had a bad season. And really, you have to struggle just to find bad games that Richard Sherman has had. So he has always consistently been one of the top guys at his position in the league when he's been healthy. Last year, he wasn't quite. And it was another year on the calendar. And he's a little bit older now. So again, this all comes back to me for expectations. I mean, I hear people, you know, I was on Twitter, you know, reading all about it and stuff and reading different articles and looking at Rick Stroud's Twitter feed and Greg Allman's Twitter feed and the Joe Bucks fan Twitter feed. And people are saying, you know, they're bringing in another aging guy. I don't know why they're doing this. You know, it's like they're bringing in another Darrell Revis. So what? You know, how'd that work out? Which, by the way, Allman correctly pointed out, Darrell Revis worked out pretty okay for the Bucks. He actually made the Pro Bowl the year he was here. And even after he left, he went on to be an every-game starter for a Super Bowl team after that. So he had plenty left in the tank. But again, when I say it all comes down to expectations, no one is trying to say they have signed Richard Sherman in his prime, just like no one was trying to say Darrell Revis was in his prime. The only question that really matters here is, are you getting an improvement from what you already have by signing Richard Sherman? So you're not comparing him to his 2013, 14, 15, 16 self. You're comparing him to the 2021 versions of the other people we have here, whether it's Dee Delaney or Cockerell or Jamel Dean. And I don't think there's any compare, even now. And supposedly he's healthy. He's dropped a little bit of weight after he had gained some weight. I mean, there's no reason to believe he's not an improvement. And I'm totally with, I mean, I'm not one of these guys that just likes to sign big names just to say, oh, they're big names. But he is a good player. And there's a reason, and Tom Brady was recruiting him over the past few weeks, trying to get him to come over here. You know, the Bucks obviously have a need. And when Sherman came here first, you know, he came here the other night, I think it was Tuesday night or maybe something like that. And it was late when he got here and he didn't have the visit until Wednesday. But then it happened pretty quick. Like, he came here with the mind to sign. And there was three other teams that may have wanted him. But he wanted to come here. The Bucks didn't want to have him leave without being signed. And it didn't happen. He didn't leave. In fact, he's wearing a Buccaneer practice uniform today. And he's out there on the field at McDillon MLK. So good for us. I think it's a good move. I mean, the Bucks have the room under the cap. Just to break down his contract, he'll make a little above what is the league minimum for someone with his age and experience, which I think is close to $1 million. He'll make $1.2 million. Now, that gets prorated because you get paid 18 paychecks in the NFL, basically, you know, for every week of the season, including the bye week. So he gets the $1.2 million divided by 18 minus 3 of those paychecks, which comes out to around $1 million. And then he gets incentives, which are $25,000 per game that he plays for the Bucks. So if he plays in all of them, that's about $350K. Well, not about, it is $350K. Then he's got some snap percentage incentives. So if he plays 45% of the snaps, and the Bucks make the playoffs, these are all qualified by the Bucks making the playoffs. If he plays 45% of the snaps plus the Bucks make the playoffs, he gets an extra $300K. If he plays 55% of the snaps and the Bucks make the playoffs, it goes up to $600K. And if it ends up being 65% of the snaps and playoffs, it goes up to $900K. So between those incentives, let's say he does play two-thirds of the downs, and then the per-game incentive plus his base salary. That comes out to a little over $2 million. And again, you're not comparing him to his old self. You're comparing him to who else we have right now. I think he will help. I think his skill set helps. You know, he's a big, tall guy, 6'3". The Bucks play a lot of zone coverage out there, and then they'll walk guys up selectively to be, you know, more pressed, but mostly they play zone. And I think it fits into his skill set. I think what they do will not, and I'm not saying his athleticism has diminished terribly. We'll have to see for ourselves when he gets out there. But even if it has, I think the style of defense the Bucks play will kind of mute that a little bit. I think his tackling will help. And I think it's, again, just, it's somebody else you need. Now, how are they going to use him? Richard Sherman, he almost always plays on the left side. And the thing is, Carlton Davis usually plays on the left side. And Bruce Arians actually, I don't know if this is for sure or not, but Bruce Arians dropped a hint when he was asked about signing Sherman. He said some things, mainly praising Carlton Davis for his flexibility. So, I mean, if I'm just reading between the lines, that means maybe Carlton Davis is going to have a go on the right side so Sherman can go to his more natural left side. And if that's an adjustment for, Carlton Davis more so than for Sherman, it sounds like he's okay with it. So that's what I would imagine you'd see. And then when Sean Murphy Bunting comes back, if he comes back, maybe he gets bumped into nickel or whatever, but that's, who even knows if that's going to happen or when that's going to happen. So, for now, and, even watching Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting when he was healthy, this is an upgrade. This is something that doesn't hurt the Bucks in any way, and the money's not an issue. So I was actually pleasantly surprised to see this happen, and I don't want to say surprised, but, I thought he might visit a few teams, and when it turned out he was coming here first, I was like, okay, that ain't half bad. And it turned out working out well because he is now a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He'll wear number 5. Giovanni Bernard is number 25, which is Sherman's usual number, but he's going to wear number 5. And so he will be suited up on Sunday. We'll see how much of a factor he plays. And, hopefully they don't need him to play that much of one to be able to handle a team like New England. Mac Jones has looked decent. I mean, I'm not saying he's bad, but he's a rookie, and he struggled last week. It is Bill Belichick, but knowing the bulldog competitor Brady is, and we have a coach-player thing like this, only one of them is on the field. Brady's the one on the field. Belichick can coach and prepare his team and things like that, but it's hard for me to imagine Brady, just knowing what we all know about him, not being ready for the lights to come on for this one. And I expect good things from the Bucs Sunday night, especially coming off of a loss, and especially given all the circumstances and things like that. If you want to email me, I'd love to hear from you. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. It's BobbyGameDay. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can follow me at BobbyGameDay. And I just tweeted something, by the way, a little while ago. Doug Ferrer, or it might be Ferrar. I never know how to pronounce it, but he's a football writer for SI. And he actually had a long sit-down interview with Richard Sherman. This is before he signed with the Bucks. But it was not very long ago, talking about his potential return. They broke down some film. He showed why Sherman still is a good player at this point, just looking at some film from 2019, even though there wasn't that much overall to look at. And also had some really interesting stuff that Sherman said. Needs to be mentioned. I forgot to mention it. He does have the off-field issues. Obviously, he has the 5 misdemeanors that he's charged with, stemming from a potential DUI incident that happened over the summer. That is something you can get suspended for, but the NFL does not typically do anything with those things until the legal process has played itself out, and he's pleaded not guilty to those misdemeanors, and all that really won't be decided as far as the legal parts of it until after this year is over anyway. So it doesn't really factor much right now. It does need to be mentioned, but I recommend if you go to my Twitter feed, @BobbyGameDay, you'll be able to see it because I retweeted it. Giving that article a look and watching some of those clips and reading some of the stuff Sherman had to say, because it was pretty interesting. And I think it's a good move for the Bucs. How good of a move it ends up being, we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think it hurts to try and make a move there in the secondary, considering what we've seen so far already. The game is on the road on Sunday night. And this is something that I found interesting because I was reading about home field advantage and the way it's slowly been disappearing the past few years. And I say the past few years because it actually predates last year. Last year, when there were no crowds, there was the COVID. it's an easy thing to write off and say, oh, well, every site was a neutral site last year. But if you go back a couple years here, and this is just, I don't know why this is. Nobody's really figured it out yet. In 2019, home teams had what was to that point their worst over. This isn't against the spread. This is just straight up. Home teams had their worst winning percentage ever in 2019. It was 132 and 123 with one tie for the home team. And actually, the road team had more points than the home team as far as the cumulative score. And that was 2019, again, with full fans and crowds as raucous as ever before any of us had even heard of COVID-19. Then last year, being 2020, no fans at all, it got even worse. For the first time ever, road teams had a winning record. Home teams were 127, 128 with one tie, so one game below 500 for the home teams. And then this year so far, there have only been 3 weeks, 48 total games have been played, and sticking right to that stat line, the home teams and road teams have split those first 48 games, 24-24. And if you want to count that Saints-Packers game in week one that was in Jacksonville, that wasn't really a Saints home game. That was more of a neutral site game. So really, home teams are 23-24 in their home stadium. So, you know, and just as far as gambling goes, like, it was always just an assumed, hey, here's a three-point home line. Like, if a team was favored by three and the game was in that team's stadium, it was just presumed, okay, these two teams are dead even, and that's it. Then we're giving them a three-point line for being at home. And that is, a few gambling experts they interviewed, and they've talked about how they've made adjustments. And at this point now, home field advantage is down to like one, maybe a point and a half, point and a half at most. Like, it doesn't matter that much. I don't know why that is. Again, you can't just say it's COVID because it happened. It was, this trend has been reversing itself going back even before 2018, 2019. You know, it wasn't just the COVID year in 2020. And you can say, well, maybe teams have gotten better with their audibles. Teams are more prepared. I have no idea. I honestly don't. And home field advantage has always fascinated me to begin with because, like, you know, when you're younger and before we had more ways to quantify these things, you just assume, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's tough to go into a hostile environment. Everybody's yelling and screaming. They're making noise when you have the ball. They're quiet when the offense has the ball. You know, they cheer if you drop a pass, things like that. And, you know, I was looking at a few studies on this. In fact, there's a book called Scorecasting, which I've mentioned before, that took like an advanced numbers look at a lot of phenomenon in sports and tried to like assign actual values to them and or figure out what is perceived and what's actually real. And they did one on home field advantage. And what they figured out was, what their one study determined, doesn't mean this is the only study that's been done on it, but they figured out that it had nothing to do with traveling. It had nothing to do with fans yelling at the players. They actually looked at all the different sports that have two teams in one city, like when the Nets played the Knicks or the Jets played the Giants or the Cubs played the White Sox or the Clippers and the Lakers, all those games, which shouldn't have any home field advantage because it's both teams being in the same town. And they found that home field advantage numbers still held up. And they were like, well, why? Why would it matter, like, if the Islanders are playing the Rangers, or even more so, like, the Clippers and Lakers, who play in literally the same arena, not just the same city? And they said, why do we still see the same percentage of home victories as we do with all the rest of the league? And then they figured out what they basically could come up with. The only thing that made any difference was that home teams tended to get a little bit more of an officiating bump. And that officiating bump was more pronounced depending on the crowd. For example, they looked at soccer games like in Europe too, and the same thing came out. Didn't have anything to do with travel, didn't have anything to do with fans waving their arms when you're trying to shoot a free throw. None of that stuff matters. All the fields are the same dimensions. All the baskets are the same height. You know, all that stuff's overrated. People screaming and yelling, whatever. But what mattered was some of those European soccer stadiums have tracks around them. Fans are further away, it doesn't feel like it's that big of a deal. Those teams had less of a home field advantage. Again, not because of the fans yelling at the players, but because the refs instinctively, you know, a lot of those 50-50, do I call it, do I not type things, they tend to lean toward the home team subconsciously. I'm not saying there's anything crooked about this. It's just human nature. And then the tighter the fans got packed, like some of these stadiums have the fans like 10 feet away from the sidelines. Some of them have giant running tracks in between them. And they were able to really like it was interesting. I recommend you all read it. It's a book called Scorecasting. So I don't necessarily know what this means for the rest of the 2021 NFL season or if it means anything, but I thought it was pretty interesting. It's something I'll be keeping an eye on the rest of the year, and if you're into the whole, as the great Chris Thomas used to say, short-term investment brokerage that is sports gambling, then maybe it's something you want to keep in mind. But the books have all adjusted to begin with anyway. So with that in mind, I want to leave you with one more thing, actually, because, you know, our reality has changed a lot over the last couple years, and not even really less than 2 years, it's changed quite a bit. So it's easy to just forget what your past was when your new reality becomes the norm. And now that we've got Tom Brady, a Super Bowl, all these things, now we've got stars from other places in the NFL wanting to come here. Richard Sherman, you know, actually when he announced that he was coming to the Bucs, it was on his podcast. That's how the news broke. It wasn't any reporter that broke it. It was Sherman himself. And he made a few comments on his podcast, which you can listen to if you just Google it. I'm not sure what the name of it is. But he said one thing that stuck out to me, and Greg Allman tweeted it. He said, quote, "Obviously, they're coming off the Super Bowl. They return all their starters. They have a great veteran team, tons of talent. Obviously, Tom Brady at the helm. You always have a chance. It's a proven team." And I read that quote, and I was thinking about, like, if you could go back in time to the moment that Jameis threw the pick six to end the season, the end of the 2019 season against Atlanta in overtime. And, like, if I could go back in time and, like, 5 minutes after that happened, just read that tweet to myself and trying to make sense of all that, I'd be like, wait a minute, they're coming off the Super Bowl? Wait, Tom Brady? Like, well, and Richard Sherman? What? Like, all these things, but, it, you know, that a proven team? Like, the, what's proven about the Bucs? But that's how fast it's all turned around. And it's another reason why I tell you not to worry too much about losing a game this past week, because these things, they come and they go. They turn around quite a bit. And the Bucs were 7-5 last year before things really got going. We're only in week four, baby. But week four is going to be a fun one. It's going to be the Patriots and the Bucs. It's always fun. I don't care how many times we play on national TV. I don't care how used to it we get. We had the Thursday nighter to open the year. We're going to have another Thursday nighter and another Sunday nighter later in the year. And national TV is kind of more commonplace now. But I always think back to that young boy who never got to see the Bucs ever play in any of these type of games and how excited I always got when they did. And Sunday night's going to be a great time just hearing that theme music, knowing the whole nation's watching. It's always something to be treasured. So call your friends over, get together, watch it with people you know, have fun, or whatever it is, take advantage of it. It's not just another Sunday at 1 o'clock. And in the meantime, I'll be back next week. We'll hash out everything that happened one way or the other. Hopefully we're talking about a 3-1 football team. But take care of yourself. Have a fun weekend. Be safe. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, letting me be on this website, the best place anywhere for Bucs coverage. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. And thanks to you. Have fun this weekend and wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucs.